From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Gerrymandering is ruining our democracy. The power of gerrymandering can't be overstated. Unfair maps only benefit the party in power and strips the minority party of any agency.
When legislators pick their own constituents, instead of the voters having the ability through a heavily contested regular election as well as the primary elections to be able to choose their own leaders, we end up in a circumstance in which it is natural for many members of the General Assembly as well as other units of government to then decide to act outside of what is appropriate and proper.
This is not a place for to the victor go the spoils. The party that wins shouldn't then be able to keep pushing that envelope.
Illinois is getting set for another redistricting cycle. And could there be a new method for drawing legislative boundaries? Some say it's well past time. We'll discuss the latest ideas on that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and with me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, and he's also been a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. With us in the Capitol building is the IPR Statehouse editor Brian Mackey, and also with us Doug Finke of the State Journal Register. Doug, good to have you back on once again.
Good to be here.
Let me start this week by talking about redistricting. It's one of those topics that a lot of people discuss, doesn't seem to get taken seriously until about the time right now when we're looking ahead to a remap of legislative boundaries. And some lawmakers are proposing a constitutional amendment that would change how the maps are drawn. Brian, give us some background on that.
Yeah, well, this is something that has long been sought by good government types and especially Republicans here in Illinois who have seen Democrats hold at least majorities and often supermajorities in the state legislature for the past decade or two. And so this week we had the latest iteration of this. There have been other attempts. There is even now an ongoing attempt for a sort of citizen initiative. This is a bipartisan group of lawmakers, members of the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans. Still a relatively small number. They need supermajorities to even get it on the ballot before voters. But coming together to say that this is something that they want Illinois to have go on the ballot so that Illinois voters can change the state constitution. So an independent commission would be drawing the maps.
Well, Doug, is there any reason to think this will be more successful than previous calls for redistricting reform?
Not in my mind, but you never know. Times change, even in the General Assembly. We know that Speaker Madigan has not exactly embraced the idea of independent groups drawing the maps. The newly elected Senate President Don Harmon, a statement from his office that he looks forward to reviewing this proposal. But at the same time, prior to his election, he did a television interview and was asked about maps. And paraphrasing here, but he basically thought that the maps were turning out pretty well the way we do things now. So Again, things can change over time, and but I just don't see the momentum here in the General Assembly to put it on the ballot that way.
And Charlie, it was mentioned that this is a bipartisan proposal. Does that make this any more palatable, you think, for the Democrats who are in control and likely to remain in control to do anything that could possibly take some power away from them?
I would guess it's only palatable for those Democrats who signed on as co-sponsors. And as was mentioned, it requires 71 votes in the House, 36 votes in the Senate. It's got to occur before the first week no later than the first week of May to be on the ballot. So I would guess the chances of this actually going through are about as great as me being the starting pitcher in the All-Star game.
Well, Charlie, you followed this through the years. Can you talk just kind of in a quick sense here about how this process of redistricting works? I'm sure most people aren't paying a lot of attention to it through the years.
Well, basically, the new constitution back in 1970 came up with a way to redistrict where the initial burden, so to speak, was on the General Assembly and the governor. If they couldn't get it done, then it went to a bipartisan commission, equal numbers of Republicans and Democrats. And if they couldn't get it done, then there was a tiebreaker chosen from two nominees proposed by the Supreme Court. The first year that this was in effect, in 1971, there was an agreement between the parties in the commission, and they came out with a map. 10 years later, because of the cutback amendment, 59 House seats were going to be eliminated, so it really was no way for the legislative leaders on the remap commission to get it done. It went to a draw. The Democrats won. They drew maps for the decade of the 80s. They controlled. Republicans won the draw in the 90s. They controlled the Senate throughout that period. The Democrats, however, retained the House 4 out of the 5 elections. And then since the turn of the century, it's been Democrats in control, and they've been able to draft lines that enabled them to have solid majorities in the General Assembly. The reason the Constitutional Convention chose this method was because in the election in 1964, there had been a failure to draw new House districts. And all the members of the House, back then 177, ran at large. So as a voter, you got to vote for your favorite 118 candidates out of the 236 names that were on the ballot. So CONCON, to try and avoid that situation, put in this method to redistrict. And the expectation was the risk of losing the draw was so threatening, was sort of like Russian roulette, and the parties would naturally agree to some compromise rather than run the risk of being shut out entirely. That proved not to be the case, and so now we have a situation where all things appear that the Democrats will draw a map. They'll draw it to protect their incumbents to try and maximize their strength. And Governor Pritzker will, I would be willing to bet, will, if it's not too outrageous, will go ahead and sign it. One of the things that's interesting about this proposed amendment is it would also cover congressional districts. The Constitution is currently silent on drawing congressional districts. Legislature does it. If the legislature can't get it done, then basically it's the federal courts that approve a plan.
And Brian, other states do go ahead.
I just want to respond to something that Charlie said about his sort of suspicion that the governor would sign this. And I think that is an interesting and open question that needs further exploration. When we asked, a number of us reporters asked the governor's press office whether he had a position on this latest constitutional amendment proposal. His press aide replied with a link to a news conference that the governor had given 2 weeks ago, in which he was asked sort of in general about redistricting. And he reiterated, which he's something that he has said on the campaign many times, which is that he would veto an unfair map. But his office did not respond to follow-up questions about, what are the governor's criteria for what is a fair map? Does he consider the current map, which has resulted in Democratic supermajorities in the House and Senate for much of the last decade, does he consider that fair or unfair? These are questions that the governor has not answered in any detail, and obviously he would be under enormous pressure from, one imagines, Democrats, if they end up making, the leaders making a map that would be favorable to Democrats. And even nationally, especially, and this is where Charlie was mentioning the congressional districts, there are people who say, fair map sounds great, but why should Illinois, a blue state, unilaterally disarm when it comes to congressional seats? If it can maximize its advantage while Republicans are doing the same thing in places like Texas. And we've even seen some states Republican states moving to redistrict, not even every 10 years, but with, just sort of to try and maximize their advantage in the middle of a decade. And so we have not seen that sort of weaponization of this particular process to that extent here in Illinois. And you do have voices out there who say Democrats should not unilaterally disarm and this needs more of a nationwide solution.
Well, Doug, let me ask you, because some states do have more of an independent policy in place when it comes to redistricting. Does it seem to be working in those places? Have you heard anything regarding that?
I can't honestly say that I can weigh in on that. That process is in place. Iowa is an example. I haven't talked to people from Iowa to know whether they think it's working properly or not. So I don't know of any efforts to change that process. So I assume that it's meeting with some acceptance.
You know, and it's interesting looking at the composition here, too. And even one of the sponsors I talked to, State Representative Tara Costa Howard, seemed to have questions about some of the things, and she is the chief sponsor in the House, about some of the things that are in it. For example, it would be, under this constitutional amendment, a 17-member commission. You'd have 7 members from the Democratic Party, 7 from the Republican Party, and 3 members who would be independent, not having affiliated with any party, at least in the last 5 years. And there's this whole long list of restrictions. So people could not be elected officials. They can't be candidates. They can't be consultants or employees of officials or political candidates at any level of government. They can't be a lobbyist at any level of government. They can't have an ownership interest in any company that has a government contract. And they can't be a party official. And on top of that, they can't be the parent, child, stepchild, sibling of one of those officials. So you could run into this situation where, as Representative Costa Howard said, maybe the sibling of somebody who's on the library board somewhere might actually be a good candidate for this commission, but because of these restrictions would not be able to get on. And she said that's something that she hopes to continue negotiating through this process.
And Brian,
it's interesting, though, sponsors said that they have made changes to this proposal. This has been, as we've said, the idea of this independent commission or whatever drawing maps has been around for some time. They've tried to get it on the ballot a couple of times earlier, and it's been struck down by the courts. Some of the sponsors said that they have made changes to this proposal to try to address some of the issues that have come up in the past. I know the Democrats, one of the previous iterations, were concerned about whether the Voting Rights Act would be violated by trying to execute this commission. So supposedly these changes are going to address that. But again, as Brian pointed out, there are a whole lot of restrictions on people who can serve at this point. And it's prompted some cynicism among some people about just who is going to be available to be on this commission.
Well, one of the questions in my mind, for example, is it talks about being affiliated with a political party. What does affiliated mean? In Illinois, as I'm sure all our listeners know, you don't register by party. The only indication of your party preference is on primary day when you go in and you choose a ballot of a party, or if you don't want, you can vote on local issues, referenda issues, without even having to declare for a party. So what would the measurement be? I don't believe it's defined in there.
And Brian, this is not the only proposal that's out there, correct?
No, yeah. And there is another one. State Representative, or I should say former State Representative Peter Breen, who lost his reelection campaign a couple of years ago, is out there pursuing a petition process to get one on the ballot. His proposal would have a 12-member, purely bipartisan commission. It wouldn't have the sort of independent voters on there appointed by, and it also wouldn't sort of have the pretense of objectivity and disconnection from the current political process. It would basically allow the people we call the four tops, the Speaker of the House and the Republican leader in the House and the President of the Senate and the Republican leader in the Senate, to each appoint 3 people. The problem is that a number of these attempts at getting changes to Article 4 of the Illinois Constitution, which deals with the General Assembly, have run into constitutional problems because of the way the Illinois Supreme Court has interpreted the very narrow way in which you can try and get things on there. Now, Mr. Breen is an attorney. He says he's worked hard to try and overcome that by just keeping it as simple as possible, and that, you know, he's confident that it does meet the requirements in both the text of the Constitution and in keeping with past Illinois Supreme Court case law. But he is still trying to gather signatures and get that on the ballot, and that would circumvent the political process here.
Well, before we move on to this, Doug, I'll let you have the last word, but it seems to me that the final decision on this, or one of the final decisions at least, will rest with the House Speaker, Michael Madigan. He's also the State Democratic Party chairman. He's not weighed in on this proposal, has he?
I have not asked him about it personally, but Mr. Mackey is...
No, he's just said, I mean, his spokesman said it's under review, which is what you typically mm-hmm. hear when things kind of fall into the black hole around here.
Let's move on to talk for a couple of minutes here about a departure from the Illinois Supreme Court, a fellow that even if you don't follow the court, you might have been more familiar with him from his prior career in which he was a kicker for the Chicago Bears. But Justice Robert Thomas, he's been on the court for a while now, and then it is expected he is going to retire here in the next few weeks. And Brian, fill us in on Bob Thomas.
Yeah, he was elected to the court back in 2000 and has, as you said, been on for 20 years now. He is retiring from the court, but not from the working world. He's going to go work for a firm called Power Rogers, which is one of the big powerhouse trial lawyer firms. They do a lot of personal injury cases. It's rather interesting because Justice Thomas is seen, I mean, he is a Republican justice. He controversially, when he campaigned for the court, campaigned as the only pro-life candidate on the ballot, which was seen as, somewhat out there for a judicial candidate to make that sort of political statement. But he has been a conservative voice on the court. He's going to work for this firm. He does have a relationship with this firm. He, I believe, he went to school to college with Mr. Joe Power, one of the names on the door, so to speak. And he also worked with the firm when he decided about 15 years ago or so to sue a suburban newspaper, which had accused him of committing a political shimmy shammy, basically trading his vote on the court for a political favor, which he adamantly denied and ultimately prevailed in the lawsuit. Jury awarded him $7 million, but he settled later for $3 million.
And a replacement on the court has already been named.
Yeah, it has, or I should say he has, and this is an interesting sort of political wrinkle because it basically lets the Republican Party field this candidate in an off-year election. This is the second judicial district. We've been talking about redistricting on this show. Interestingly, the Illinois Supreme Court districts have not been redrawn since, I think it's the 1964, as Charlie was referring to earlier. But more than 50 years, the Illinois Supreme Court districts have been in place. And there is some thought that this area, particularly on a presidential election year, might have trended a little more Democratic than it has in the past. This is this sort of northern part of the state from Galena in the west over to the Cook County suburbs, not Cook County itself, but all the suburbs from DuPage County westward. And this is where Sean Casten and Lauren Underwood were able to unseat Republican congresspeople in that area. And so there was some thought that Republicans might have a little bit harder time in this election year. So the judges, you know, the Chief Justice, by not announcing this like a month or two ago, he could have, if he would have announced it a month or two ago, the seat would have been up this election year. By timing his announcement now, there's an appointment in there. Judge Michael Burke, who has been a lower court judge for about 20 years now, he is going to be filling that vacancy and will presumably run for the seat in 2 years, though I have not talked to him about that.
And just real quick, not related to Ann Burke, who's on the court?
Yes, that is correct. Not related to Ann Burke, who is the current Chief Justice of the court and the spouse of Chicago Alderman Ed Burke, who is facing corruption allegations in Chicago.
Charlie, you wanted to weigh in on that?
No, I was going to say Justice Thomas would have been up for retention this year, which would require 60% voter approval for him to stay on the bench. And I wonder if, as was mentioned, the fact that the suburban areas might be more Democratic, I wonder if that went through his mind at all.
It could, especially if, you know, the conventional wisdom when I started covering the courts in Illinois 15 years ago was that appellate and Supreme Court justices almost never lose retention elections. It had happened once, I think, in the entire time that we have had the retention system in. But then, in the past decade or so, there have been two very close calls. Justice Thomas Kilbride in the 3rd District, which is kind of the northern part of central Illinois from the Quad Cities over west. He came rather close to losing a retention battle after sort of big business groups went after him. He was first elected as a Democrat. And then back in 2014, Justice Lloyd Carmier came even closer to losing retention after a very small group of trial lawyers dumped hundreds of thousands of dollars into a campaign to unseat him just in the last couple of weeks before the election. It was kind of a sneak attack. So one thinks if Democrats had unlimited resources and wanted to try and swing the balance of political power on the court at the last minute, they could have tried dumping a lot of money into that 2nd District seat to have Justice Thomas be not retained. And, you know, it all ties together with today's discussions, because one reason that the political parties, or I should say the main reason that political parties care about the makeup of the Illinois Supreme Court, aside from all the policy issues they decide, is that the court occasionally gets the last word on the legislative remap process. And so that's why Democrats view it as an important bulwark to, you know, make sure that they have a majority of justices on the court who were elected as Democrats, because that is sort of the one vote that they're expected to take where they're kind of adhering to a political party line.
Just a few minutes left here. And, Doug, I want to go to you because Governor Pritzker is going to be delivering his second budget address next week. We haven't seen exactly what he's going to be talking about in it, but we probably have a few good ideas. So give me your thoughts on what you expect to hear from the governor.
I would expect him to use the budget speech basically as a kind of a launching point for his quest to get the graduated income tax approved in the state. That's going to happen. That's going to be on the ballot in November. So I would look at this as kind of the kickoff to the campaign season for that. There have been some rumors, for lack of a better word, rolling around about exactly what he would do. One of them was that he would almost present basically two budgets, one that says this is what we achieve or can achieve with the flat tax. This is how much better we can do if we have a graduated income tax that brings in additional revenue to the state. Again, that's just speculation on people's parts. We don't know for sure what it is, but I think for sure he has to make a pitch in this budget speech for the graduated tax.
Doug, do you expect we're going to hear or see more of an austere budget proposal for this year going in, or is he going, you know, is he going to talk about, you know, big increases in spending in some ways in anticipation of trying to get this money down the road? Or, you know, do we have a good feeling for that?
I don't think we have a good feeling for that. I think it's by necessity there's going to be a certain amount of austerity based on the current revenues that are coming in. You know, you can't present a budget that assumes the voters are going to approve a graduated income tax later in the year. So you have to work with the revenues that are you project to come in now. We're facing increases, as always, with pension contributions. It depends on the commitment that lawmakers have made to increase education spending steadily over a decade, whether they continue to meet that promise. There's certainly other spending pressures out there, so I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot of room for brand new shiny programs.
And sure.
Yeah, and
go
I
ahead,
think
Ryan.
That I was just going to say, I think that and something I'll be watching for is whether this signals an end to the bipartisan budget making we've had in Illinois for at least the last three fiscal years, starting with the summer of 2017, which was the FY18 budget year, when the budget impasse was finally ended. That had a number of Republicans crossing the aisle to vote with Democrats to do that. And then the following two budget years, there was bipartisan support for the budget. But this year, House Republican leader Jim Durkin, a couple weeks ago here in the Capitol, we asked if he would, you know, consider supporting a budget that counted on any money from the graduated income tax. And he said, without any equivocation, absolutely not. So if the, you know, and this is just a budget proposal that the governors do, there's going to be rounds after round of committee hearings, and all the agency directors are going to come forward and make their pitch. But we'll be waiting to see by the end of session if the legislature decides to actually pass an austerity budget that doesn't count on the money from the graduated income tax, or if they're going to budget as though they're expecting it to happen.
All right, let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, everybody's been paying attention to how the marijuana legalization has rolled out, and they talk about how the sales have been and the long lines and everything. Well, Western Illinois University is approaching the issue from a different angle. Beginning with this fall semester, Western is going to offer a minor in cannabis production. And it's to help prepare people for what everyone expects will be a burgeoning industry in Illinois.
All right, Doug.
Among the glut of bills that are being introduced right now by lawmakers is one that would expand again the number of specialty license plates in the state. This would take in professional soccer, women's and men's soccer teams in Chicago, and the WNBA team, as well as minor league sports teams. Another part of the bill would rescind the license plate that's available for St. Louis Rams football fans. I checked with the Secretary of State's office to find out what happens to the plates that are already on the road. They said there are none. They never produced the plate, and nobody ever bought any.
So. All right. And Brian.
Yeah, there was news this week that Governor Pritzker is releasing $500 million in state funding for a big University of Illinois project known as the Discovery Partners Institute. About half of that, and I should say that that money is being doubled, in the process of being doubled by private sector donations. About half of that money is for a big tech incubator hub in Chicago, a huge development on Chicago's south side. The rest of the money is going to be distributed to sort of innovation centers all across the state. What exactly is this thing going to do? It's kind of amorphous, and that's as one of our friends of the program, Amanda Vinicky, described it in her coverage. And some of that is still going to be worked out in years ahead, but people do say jobs, technology, look for that sort of thing. Full disclosure, the University of Illinois is the employer for those of us who work for NPR Illinois on this panel.
All right, and that will do it for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke of the State Journal Register. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.